All right, today is Monday, January 22nd, 2018. Hard to believe 2018 already. And here we are in Yerushalayim. Where should we say we'll be cut off on all sides because he's going to go to Yad Vashem. In other words, this whole area, wow. All right, Mikavela Tov, that due to the Vice President being here, we will find our way back, we will find our ways back home later today. Now, yesterday's shiar, I have to say, was a new first for me. I had interrupted the shiar, so on. If you heard the tape, I get a big compliment in the middle of the shiar. That doesn't always happen. Should those be closer, the recordings, or it's just as good far away?
Should be the same. It's usually the same.
Yeah, it should be the same. Good. So what Rabbi Rubin said yesterday is very moving, and there is a lot that I gained from the Rav. To briefly summarize, because I want to go further, there's no question that the most basic message that the Rav left us with was continuity. And the whole concept, our achrayat, our responsibility to the earlier generations. Man does not just live for himself and in the present. There's a past, there's a future. And in my humble opinion, the hesped for Rav Chaim Heller was the ultimate statement of the Rav, Pleitatzof Reichen. You'll ask, where was this, is this any different than Rav Aaron Kotler, than Rav Moshe Feinstein, than the Lubavitcher Rebbe? The answer is absolutely not. But the Rav's ability to articulate it was very unique. He was a Darshan par excellence. Where he got that ability, it didn't come from his family. The Rav told the story on Rav Chaim that Rav Chaim was Briska Rav, and in Europe the minig was that the Rav, the Shtat Rav, Darshan twice a year, Shabbos HaGadol and Shabbos Shuva. And the Rav told the story many, many times. So Rav Chaim comes to Bris, and he gets up to Darshan on Shabbos Tshuva, and he starts talking with the people. We were worried. We figured you're not going to get here. Happy to see you. It's a sign, Baruch Hashem. And Rav Chaim gets up, and he starts to Darshan and to give the people Musa, Medach Pan Tshuva, and Rav Chaim breaks down and cries and says, how can I give Musa? I myself have to do tshuva, and he walked off, and he never gave a drasha again. That's what the Rav tells us about Rav Chaim. About Rav Moshe, the Rav once told over one drasha he heard from Rav Moshe from the Breshit Rabba, that they threw Emmet down on the floor, and Rav Moshe gave a whole drasha. Why do you throw Emmet? We have to have Emmet. And the Rav said to Rav Moshe, Tata, Vikumta Saichs a Darshan, and where did you become a Darshan? He said to his father. But the Rav said he became a Darshan because in Poland he heard the Top Darshanim. And he was a teenager. He came to Poland in 1919, let's say, running away from Chaslovich. He was, how old? Make the Cheshbon. He was 16, 17 years old. And that Darshan had a tremendous impact on him. So there's no question that the Rav as a Darshan, these ideas, the way he expressed it, second to none. Yes, Yitzchak, what did
I have a feeling that his early Rebbe in the Cheder.
Well, there's no question that
made everything come alive. He wasn't just giving Rashi.
Right. Okay. There's no question that being exposed to Hasidus, let's put it this way, those of you that are Hasidim understand the Hasidic way of life, min fabrengt, you understand that expression? Two, three, four Hasidim meet the Chveis on the way up to South Fallsburg, and they have an hour to sit together, so they call it min fabrengt. What does fabrengen mean? First of all, you take out a bottle of vodka, right? If you're driving, I wouldn't suggest take out a bottle of vodka, take out a bottle of Coke. Take a little machina, lekach they call it. And then they tell stories of the Rebbeim. Now these stories of the Rebbeim, there's no question that this involved dashanut, that this involved opening the heart, warmth. So I will agree with Yitzchak that it didn't all begin in Poland, but the Rav heard the Top Darshanim there. There was the Meimaichal, there was Rav Yitzchak Nissenbaum. The Rav once mentioned some of the names. There was the Medrash V'Maaseh, and these were Darshanim par excellence. Poland specialized in Darshanim. No, the Litvakim didn't equal them, the Ungarische didn't equal them, the Galaxia. But Poland, Darshanim Mufakim. And this had a tremendous impact on the Rav. But the message of the commitment to the early generations, this is basic to the Rav's teaching, and this is basic to our lifestyle. I opened my emails this morning. I took the emails that Sherry printed out for me yesterday, and I looked at them. So I was in a state of shock, Rabbi Lau, Benny Lau, participated in a gay marriage. It's beyond words. I have it here. I'm just shaking. And he blessed the couple, and he's explaining his viewpoint. This is so entirely against the heart of Yiddishkeit. An open Gemara, Chulin, look at the Gemara, Daf Tzadi Bet, Kotvin Ketuva. If you have any responsibility to the past, you can understand why this is forbidden. You don't need a chakra of a tiger. Double talk. Plain, simple double talk. That they're going to get married.
Else on the internet, by Steve Riskin, better known as Shlomo Riskin, published a 40-page tzak, explaining the function of women who are graduating from his institution, and what they can do and what they cannot do in his Orthodox women.
Okay, let me see it. You can't make a critical comment. What he published, where I want to come to that next. Okay, so we spoke about it yesterday. We spoke about the continuity. We spoke about the classroom. We spoke about the feeling of all the generations. It's very moving, very overwhelming, and it's like when you heard the Rav. It was like going to mikveh. It's like it purified you. I cannot describe what a Yortzeit Reshu was like. You came out of it a different person. It was like Maimer HaSinai. It's hard. These are the only words I can use. Now, the Rev taught me something else too, and which is crucial and comes into all the contemporary issues. We can't all think alike. Chazal already, the Gemara, it's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that the Ribbono Shel Olam made the human beings, and everyone is different. Everyone, it's not like someone who makes cars, where all the cars are the same, whatever you manufacture, and here the Ribbono Shel Olam, and each one of us is an individual. And this was a very special gift from the Rav, that we don't have to be negative. In other words, in all my years of teaching, and the older I get and the more I teach, I try to keep the negativisms away. Everyone has freedom of choice, as long as it's within the realm of halacha, where you go to a wedding and you bless. This is like Avi Weiss, what happened in New York. I mean, I can't believe my eyes. Remember I said in class, it can't be, it can't be. I actually saw their pamphlet that they give out, their weekly, whatever you want to call it, their bulletin, and they're blessing two gays that should be boina bayit ne'mam b'Yisrael. I mean, this is that we have to talk about this is beyond comprehension. If someone would have said to me in the 50s, sitting next to the Rav, that there'll come a day that a Marbitz Torah will have to talk about this and explain why it's wrong. I mean, what are you, crazy? This is axiomatic. The Rav got hysterical in the 70s when the sexual revolution was hitting already the Jew, Visa Kritzlich, Hazay Yidlzich, and the Rav got hysterical with gays, and it's beyond words. But when there's no transgression of halach, everyone's entitled to their own expression. And this is a very crucial message, and it's a very healthy message. And in my humble opinion, we would have a lot less problems with our children, with OTD, a new word that we never heard about 70, 60 years ago, off the derech. Let the kids breathe, and halavai, litvakim would have siddisha children, litvitrisha children, and the yekis in the middle, we would all benefit. But you see, the question of women, this was something else that I saw from Rebbe. he didn't run away from contemporary issues. And as I mentioned yesterday, I happen to be studying now a book on Tona. How I picked it up, someone gave it in shul, someone evidently gets these books, makes contributions, and he gives it away. So if I see it's a volume that will broaden my understanding of life, I take it. So I had this volume about a year and a half, backed up on it, and now I got to it. And very interesting, different Torah on weddings, on running a home. I mean, he gives Musa to the Chassidim about waking up early, setting an example for your children. I couldn't believe these words, because these are problems that we all have. What's the example we set for our children and kids? He's down to earth. That if a kid has to go to school and you wake him up late because you woke up late, so his whole day starts, he's in a rush, he's upset. Kid has to come to school happy, not fayokt and fakrokt. So when it comes to women, I couldn't believe this is the year 2018, as we said a few minutes ago. His whole attitude that the woman, everything is the man, and let him run the house and let him run your life. See, the Rav and the Lubavitcher Rebbe saw we have a tremendous challenge. And we've spoken about this 1,000 times over. Gevetosha v'nachim imachem. None of us live in a ghetto today. Even in Meir Sharim, a kid walks out, goes two blocks, he's out of the ghetto. A computer today opens the entire world, is at our fingertips. So these are real challenges. And it's fascinating to see the way the Rav and the Rebbe reacted. Here too, there's a major lesson. He didn't maledict, they didn't maledict, they didn't curse. They saw what we can accept, what we can't accept. The classic example is the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who introduced Kol Ein Vabat Madlika Neirat Shabbat. And what the Rebbe did essentially is he took a mitzvah that is a feminine mitzvah and had a girl already from the age of 3 lighting candles. There was a tremendous outcry because the Rebbe said you can make a bracha, and right away people attacked. Because if you're familiar with the Aruch HaShulchan, he also paskin that the girl can make a bracha. I can tell you, in my wife, I only have daughters. Can I, God has a sense of humor. Don't ask me beyond my the first generation what I have. If we see a girl, we make a shechiyonu and dance kazatska. Believe me, it is so rare among my grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I am not going to mention how many I have. But believe me, God has a sense of humor. But when my girls were little, I remember we once in the Washington Hotel for Shabbos. It was a bar mitzvah, who would later be a Talmud of mine. And we were still in New York. This is the early 60s, mid-60s. And when Malka ben Schlicht, all my daughters, she brought with her little licht, and all the little, and these 3 little girls, ben Schlicht too. So I remember there was a Jew there for Shabbos, a second generation, he was a survivor. And he saw these girls, ben Schlicht, my daughters, he started to cry. It like it was overwhelming to him. So you see, the Rebbe did something, then the Rebbe did something else, which is also amazing. He started Fabringens for women only. If Rabbi Hertz, am I right or wrong? The only men in the room were the Rebbe and Radchotkov, his right hand. They were the only 2 men in the room. And he started these Fabringens, and it was a regular Fabringen where he spoke, and he spoke on Yana, on women's topics, and there was a tremendous broadness, a tremendous respect for women. The Rav was exactly the same. It's very interesting that on this level, they were both exactly the same. I can tell you something that I'm one of the few that know it already, because the whole generation is gone. But the original Yahrzeit Drasha, in memory of the Rebbetzin died in 67. So the first drasha the Rav was going to give was in 68. It was a classic drasha. It was on the difference between a man and woman. It's republished in Family Redeemed, published, put out by Torah Trav. But the guy named Brad Kefed has a better edition in what he quotes in his work on the Rav. And people ask me, where did you get it? Family Redeemed doesn't have it. Because I worked from a tape, and the Rav ad-libbed. And Family Redeemed worked from a manuscript. And they're missing something, because they worked from a manuscript they don't have when the Rav ad-libbed. He was unbelievable. Do you know the original plan for that talk was to be given at Stern College for women only? That the Rav. What happened was there was such an outcry. Charlie, were you around yet, or were you at Harvard, 68? You were where?
Boston.
You were in Boston. So you don't remember this in these years. A tremendous outcry. And the men, why can't we hear? So finally, they switched it to Lamport Auditorium, because Stern College couldn't hold the crowd that came. Ultimately, what happened was the Rav would speak in Lamport, and there'd be the overflow in the Beis Medrash and in Reuben Hall. They had already technological devices that you saw them on a TV screen. You know, the world changed, and the crowds that came, of course, were infinitely bigger. But you see, the Rav, this tremendous respect, which we spoke about yesterday, which he got from his mother, the attitude, the relationship with his mother. They tell a story that one time the Rav was learning in an adjacent room. Maybe he was learning with Reb Aaron, and they were talking and learning. And their mother was in the kitchen. This is when they lived on Amsterdam Avenue, across the street from the yeshiva. And the mother was in the kitchen. And they're having a machlokes in Tosfos, how to explain Tosfos. And suddenly the Rebbetzin pops up and says, Ayatatat gelernt azeh. And she told them what Reb Moshe, the way Reb Moshe learned. So she was a melumedet. What a personality. Very open. In other words, she said Tehillim. I think she had a minhag every week. She said Gan Sefer Tehillim. Rabbi Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik describes his grandmother, how she would be sitting saying Tehillim. But at the same time, he says, that doesn't mean she wasn't an expert in Russian literature. And she had this tremendous love of Russian, of War and Peace. There was tremendous Russian literature before the communist regime. And she had tremendous knowledge of the Haskalah literature, which we'll come to. And this influenced the Rav. Then you see his relationship with his wife, where, what a powerful woman, a woman in her own right. And we felt it right here in this building. So you wonder what I'm talking about? The last time we were all together, it was a moment in time, was a number of years ago, and Reb Aaron and Tova and yours truly and Malka, we were all here for Shabbos. Reb Aaron already wasn't in perfect health, but he could make it for Shabbos. And for my wife and myself, it's harder now because of the hills. My wife can't come for Shabbos. But we were all here. And Friday night, I believe it was, you can ask Rabbi Miller, he'll remember this very well. Friday night, Tova spoke, as I recall. I believe it was Friday night. I remember I spoke Shabbos here in the classroom, and Tova spoke Friday night. We had it in the hallway, and she was introduced by one of the fellows from the Kollel, who's part of the new generation. And the whole introduction was, Tova Lichtenstein, the wife of Reb Aaron, the wife of Reb Aaron, the wife of Reb Aaron. And she got up and washed his face in mud. This is the way you introduce a woman. A woman is a personality in her own right. A woman that comes, you know, Tova has a doctorate. Look at the family she raised. Look what this lady has accomplished in her life. And boy, and we were biting our lips, you know, not to laugh hysterically. So David and I afterwards, we said, boy, if we could have recorded this, we could have sold it all over the world, and Gris wouldn't have a financial problem for the next 20 decades. But you see, the Rav appreciated. And then what the women are becoming, the feminist revolution, and then you come to the tremendous question, How do you balance it out? What can we do? What can't we do? What will halacha admit? What can't halacha agree with, acquiesce with? And this problem we struggle with until today. What we saw in the Rav's lifetime, and here you'll understand why Rabbi Willick, this critique of Rabbi Willick, I try to defend him because really his heart is in the right place. But you see, in Maimonides, the Rav always had a fear that if the girls are separated from the men, I've heard from people in Boston, this goes back to the 30s, the 40s, they're not going to be taught on the same level. And here, we're living in a world where every woman goes to high school. Every woman goes to college. Many women have advanced degrees. All my daughters have advanced degrees. Many women have PhDs, MDs. One of my doctors is my Talmida. So you're not going to teach them Yiddishkeit on a high level? They're facing the same challenges that all of us face when we go out into the big world. And the Rav felt very strongly that a lady today has to be prepared for the big world 100%. I remember asking Rebbe in the early 70s when I started, I might even have it in writing, my whole discussion with him, when I started teaching women in Michlala, can I teach them Torah Shabbat Peh? I've given many shurim on this. I don't have to tell you the sugya in Masechet Saita. You have to understand the Gemara, the Mishnah, the Gemara, the Rashi, the Psak of the Rambam. No? So Rebbe said, absolutely permitted Bizman Hazeh. The only difference is, don't give them the brisket derech that you got from me. They need a more elementary approach to Gemara. I don't know whether that's entirely true today, 50 years later. Just think for a minute what I'm saying. But he felt very strongly that you have to teach the girl on a level. Interestingly enough, the Lubavitcher Rebbe said exactly the same thing. There's the famous recording of the Belzer Rebbe meeting with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and one of the questions they get involved with is, how do you develop a curriculum for women? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, word by word, exactly the Rav's approach. Women today go out, learn, study, get degrees. They have to be prepared to meet the challenges. Now, this question, of course, during the Rav's lifetime, it didn't evolve to the point that it evolved today. But what Rabbi Rubin's alluding to 1 second ago with Rabbi Riskin is, what are the limits? Are the women exactly like men? Can we ordain women? Can they do whatever a male rabbi can do, a female male rabbi can do, etc., etc.? And here, of course, you have to stand firm. And this is the Dvar Hashem, Zu Halacha, that there is a difference between a man and a woman. We don't want the man to become a woman. We don't want the woman to become a man. Unisex is not the way God made the world. And we have to know what the limits are. And we struggle with this. You saw our own, who was on the faculty here for 15 years, Rabbi Harry Hefter. He was here before Rabbi Bednash. So Rabbi Hefter opened up a Beis Medrash. He ordains women. Women are no different than men. I remember his wedding. He married. I remember his wife at the wedding. She's Fabrenta Tish. She had her guitar. It was a sight to see. It was like a female version, I thought, of Rabbi Shlomo de Kalbach. But you see, these are real problems that we're struggling with. A guy named Rakefet came up with a solution that everyone laughs at. And so phony, one rabbi took me seriously, a rabbi in Toronto, in a suburb of Toronto. But I said, we have RA and SA. There's a rabbinic authority and a spiritual authority. And if the shul is big enough, it can have a woman on staff who will deal with women. If I had my way, I would asa all rabbis meeting with women privately. Unfortunately, I don't have to give you examples of problems we have had in modern times. It is shocking beyond shocking beyond shocking. It's beyond words. And it's not just, this is in the Haredi world as much as in our world, maybe more in the Haredi world. And shocking beyond words. I don't know how we give the right today for male rabbis to meet with women. I'm sorry. A woman has a problem. She's getting divorced. And how many rabbis ran off with women they were counseling? They get divorced when rabbi was a Kohen. Suddenly he's no longer a Kohen. For 40 years he redeemed the face 50,000 children. Think for a minute what I'm saying. These are all facts. I'm not making it up. And suddenly he runs off with a grusha, and I remember, oh God, I can tell you stories on top of stories on top of stories. So this is the way I see a solution. Men, women, each within their own realm, but a rabbinical authority in the sense of Geirut and Eidut L'Kiyum Dava, this a woman can't have. A woman, a little bit sneered. I don't, the idea of a woman getting up in the middle of davening and preaching, you know, I'm totally opposed, 1,000,000,000%. You know the story where I had nachat, that I was asked the question in my son-in-law's shul. There was a big machlokes, some woman there wanted to preach in the middle of davening, lamani gara. And so my son-in-law asked me, so I told him, you have Kiddush, and 20 minutes later reassemble and do whatever you want. It's no longer davening, but you can't do it with davening or after davening. So there was an interview with Esther Rosenfeld, if I have the last name right. Esther Lichtenstein, right? What's her last name, if anyone?
Rosenberg.
I know with brother Yeshakayach. I know it's Esther Lichtenstein, very hard to, I know from when she was a gleam in her parents' eyes. So they asked Esther, she runs a whole program for girls. So she said, and how do you feel about the women speaking? So she said, look, I will accept if after davening, fine, davening is all over, a woman can't up and speak. But I said, my father did not agree with me. And she quotes her, Baron got the same Shaila, and gave exactly the answer I gave. Baruch Shekivanti L'dach G'doylem. I couldn't believe it. I saw it in Makar Rishon. But you see, we struggle with this. And I just want to mention Rabbi Willig. So Rabbi Willig made the statement, Halavai, we never taught women Gemara. Oh boy, has this reverberated. So I just want to explain Rabbi Willig. You have to be careful what you say. But I understand what he's saying. What he's saying cannot be. It's like all of a halavai, we would have never had Hitler, we never would have left the ghetto. Halavai, we would have had shidduchim. I see the new generation with shidduchim. Life was so beautiful when grandparents met grandparents who knew each other for generations. Echabaneinikel and dihastazun. You have a granddaughter, I should say. I have a grandson. Let's make a shidduch with the couples. They met under the chuppah. And you want to know something? I'm quoting the Rav now. The Rav in that famous talk on sex and marriage in the 70s. So the Rav said, he told the story of how his great-grandmother, Gutta, from Tova's name, Tova in Yiddish is Gutta. So Gutta was Rebbetzin Pesha's mother. So Gutta was playing with her doll. The Rav told the story, I've said it in class 100 times over the years. And she was playing with her doll, 12, 13 years old. And her mother says, Gutta, kumarain, come inside, mazel tov. Du bist a kala, you just became a kala. Mazel tov. And the Rav said, you never saw a couple of more devotion to each other for the close to 70 years they were married, of Rebbetzin Gutta and Rebellia Pruzhana, Rebellia Feinstein. And the Rav said, and you run around, you look, you search. We had more happiness at her, and there's a lot of truth to it. When I was in high school, I came into the library, there was Doc Shapiro. Anyone listening remember Doc Shapiro? Oh, Baruch Hashem. Remember? All right. So Doc Shapiro was retired already, but he taught history under Revel in the 20s into the 30s. This already was the early 50s, but he ran the library. I think he didn't get paid. I think it was just a volunteer. He loved the yeshiva. So he gave me a book to read, Halavai. We didn't have Xerox machines then. Halavai, I would have written down the name. What was the book about? It was a Mr. Big who made it big in America, Greenhorn, that came, 7th Avenue, the clothing industry, everything that's from China today, Aryeh. and he made it big. He was successful. Oh, and he wrote a memoir. In the memoir, he writes, he came from a Chassidish Shtub, and his wife came from a Chassidish Shtub, and they met under the chuppah. He was all of 18, she was 17, they met under the chuppah. And he says, God didn't give me a greater gift than this woman, my wife. What a beautiful book. So you see, we're struggling, but you can't change back the clock. What I just said now, someone will call me out of context. Rav Kefir is a moron. He says we should have the grandparents make the shidduch, go to Deerfield Beach, and you announce I have a grandson available, and boy, did they jump. It's a health issue. My grandson is graduating Bezalel with all the honors in the world, an American kid. Ay vey, she thinks the kid's graduating the finest, most famous art school in the world. But an American kid, the grandparents can say what they want. The kids are living in a different world. And this is, we can't change back the clock. We have to deal with reality. And Baruch Hashem, all my daughters can learn a Daf Gemara. All my daughters. My eldest daughter who made history, so the story was she was working for her master's at Hebrew U in English literature. And she was teaching in Chorev. So she saw an advertisement, very interesting challenge for women if you have a college degree and know how to learn a Daf Gemara and you can bring two letters from two different rabbis that you are observant, we're opening a new program for Toanot Rabbaniyot. It was a wild dream that female pleaders, what they call them, rabbinic pleaders, will be able to appear in the Beit Din. And my daughter saw the ad, and she had just gone through a whole series in her building from Beit Din to the Supreme Rabbinical Court. What happened was, everyone in her building had to be frum to buy in. It was a poli aguda, a shikun on Rehov Palmach. So they want to extend the apartments, expand. And one lady, an old lady, got up and said, no, I can't take the noise. And her husband went to Beit Din to stop the expansion. And all what went on. And the Beit Din ruled against the old lady. They were willing to buy her out and take her and put her in a different apartment for the time of the building. And it finally went to the Beit Nagadol. So my daughter saw the whole process. So when she saw the ad, she said, gee, I ought to give this a try. I can learn a Daf Gemara, and I have a BA, and the rest is history. So we can't change back the clock. But our big struggle today is that the world has to understand a man is a man, a woman is a woman. Tvah Hashem zu halacha. The frame has to remain solid. The picture we paint can be individualistic. But it has to be within, not without. Yeh v'tosha. This is all from the Rav. And I'll just add on, again, I want to defend all my colleagues, Rav Heschel Schechter. I spoke about the Gahak, the Yiddish again, because I learned from that that I spoke Yiddish to the Rav outside of the classroom. You follow? I could have given that whole Devar Torah in English. What, the Rav didn't understand English? But it was I spoke about it yesterday. You'll pick it up. So when Heschel was asked about a woman writing a ketuvah, so he answered, "Maisa kof." There's nothing wrong in his answer. His answer is absolutely correct. The ketuvah is not a get. I've told the story. What happened? It was Chaim Gold's wedding. Anyone know who Chaim Gold? Someone gets Reuben knows, of course. So Chaim Gold's wedding, Chaim was a wise guy, and he didn't want a normal ketuvah, and he wanted with all the diktukim of the gra, of the gong, and he wrote his own ketuvah. Fine. So now Rabban Soloveitchik is Masada Kedushin. I don't know why the Rav wasn't there. It probably had to do with health, that the Rav was already right in the mid to late 60s where the Rav is suffering. So Rabaron Soloveitchik was Masada Kedushin. Fine. The two witnesses on the Ketuvah Rabbi Parnas, Teddy Parnas, Yehuda Parnas, you know him, in your time too he was a Rebbe in the yeshiva, and a guy named Roshkoff. All right. Here I am at the wedding, and sitting at the meal, I forget where it was, maybe the Broadway Central, probably the Broadway Central, downtown New York, and suddenly in the middle of the meal, they say, we have a very important announcement, will Rabbis Parnas and Roshkoff please step up to see Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. So we step up to the head table, Reb Aaron was sitting, Eben Un. Chaim had no father, no grand. His grandfather, Rabbi Zev Gold, died, whom Machon Gold was named, and then his father, Rabbi Moshe Gold, the first rabbi of Englewood, died very young. And Reb Aaron was, the Soloveitchiks were his, they're distantly related, but it was Mamash, his parents. So we step up, and you won't believe your ears. The ketuvah that Chaim Gold copied, he copied the date. It was 100 years earlier. You follow? And who picked it up when the ketuvah was being read? Who pays attention when the ketuvah is being read? Someone listened. And instead of shvamayot, he heard sheshmayot. And he went over to Reb Aaron during the meal. Now, Reb Aaron is hysterical. He needs a new ketuvah. You can't. What are you going to do now? The ketuvah is pasul. It's finished. Aye, where do you find the ketuvah Sunday night in the Broadway Central Hotel? So they went to the caterer. The caterer had an office. The caterer started pulling, I remember this like yesterday, started pulling the drawers of the desk. And in the drawers he had folded up, thrown away ketuvah that Rabbanim didn't use, but they brought just as an emergency. So they took a folded up ketuvah that looked like it fell out of Vietnam at the height of the war. A miracle, it wasn't burned, destroyed. They had to unfold it and garnished, mitgarnished, filled in all the pratim, had a Kabbalat Kinyan again, the Adam signed again, and Chaim had a ketuvah. So instead of a unique, once-in-a-lifetime ketuvah, he had a shtickel papir that by miracles was saved from destruction. Well, what do you see from there? A ketuvah is not a get. A get, could you use that as a get? Absolutely not. You haven't anyone ever see the way a get is written? A get has to be written, l'shma, l'shma, l'shem, gerushin. They have to repeat it. The Edom have to repeat it. The Sefer has to repeat it. The Baal has to repeat it. Before he writes the get and after he writes the get. And that you would not mevatel any kavana. Ah, that's a get, because a get is the instrument that creates the divorce. But a ketuvah is a maisa kaif. All it is a bill of sale that the husband promises will be a decent husband. He'll support his wife. This is the whole extension we do today. The prenuptial is no more than an extension of the ketuvah. So I want to just defend Reb Heschel that I know what he meant. But boy, you can't talk like that, because the world, there is such enmity out there for Rabbanim, for people like Rakethet, for people who are loyal to tradition. My own Talmidim said to me, Rebbe, you got used to women learning Torah, you got to get used to women davening for the Yamin. That's one Talmid said to me. I can tell you his name. He lives not far from here. Another Talmid said to me, this already was in America, the Rebbe is irrelevant today. He stopped functioning in the 70s, the late 70s. From that time on, today, 40 years later, he's irrelevant. The Talmud said this to me. Chutzpah. Who are you talking to? But all right, that's the chutzpah. Oh, did they jump? But all right, so what I want to say, this too, I got from the Rav. And we have to struggle. Not every issue is black and white. Not every issue did Reb Chaim Brisker rule on. Not every issue did Reb Moshe Soloveitchik have to face. But at times we have to struggle. And I called it a work in process. You know how jealous I am of Chabad, because they don't have a problem at all. It's beyond words with the Shaluach and the Shlucha, how they solve the problem. And many times the shlucha is more dominant than the shaluach. You see it time and time again. and there's no problem. The shul remains a shul, the davening remains davening, the mechitza remains a mechitza. Each one knows their place with joy, but the problem for Chabad is solved. We're struggling with it right now. RCA, OU, my Talmud, Steve Przanski, and his organization, which I'm a member of, I should know I joined, but we're struggling with the problem. It's a work in process, and this too I got from the Rav. Okay, now we come, gentlemen, the heavyweight issue. And here I have a word to say. Rabbi Rubin, you wanted to ask something?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Now I want to say something and go a little bit deeper and into depth. We're living in an odd-scrum world. The odd-scrum world, so I think one of the keys, one of the factors, G'daylim are born, G'daylim. A kid of three already doesn't take off his kippah. Archro cannot deal with the famous story about Reb Chaim, who that seems he was 3 years old, Reb Chaim Briska, and someone gave him an apple, and he didn't make a bracha. He ate the apple without a bracha. So whoever gave him the apple, or whoever was around, said, "Zei fitmanzich, it's an insult for your Rebbe. He was already learning something at the age of three. You have a Rebbe, and you don't make a bracha." And Rav Chaim said, "It shows you what kind of Rebbe I have, that he raises a Talmud who doesn't make a bracha." You follow? You already saw that. There's a story like that. I don't have it totally right, but you get the point of view that the Rav told stories too. That this story actually I wrote up, and the Rav has no answer. You'll see in a second. The Rav told the story that he had strep throat when he was a kid. And they called the doctor Friday night, and the doctor was non-Jewish, but he came and he's examining, and he needs more light, more light. And Reb Chaim yells at Reb Moshe, "What's with you? What kind of amaretz are you? More light, sakonet nefashat." Okay, so you see from that story that Reb Chaim already is calling Reb Moshe an amaretz. But there's one question that the Rav could never answer. Obvious question. Why didn't Reb Chaim himself turn on the light and make it stronger? Okay? And Alpi, if you look, the Lashon HaRambam, he uses the language that the Godel Shebineim is Mechuyev L'Chalel Shabbos, because it's not Chalel Shabbos, the Shopikuach Nefesh. But you see, G'doylem, G'doylem, we human. Today we're not raised that way. Everyone was born a Godel, and he thinks he's a Godel, and is a Godel, and was a Godel, and will be a Godel, etc., etc. No one had a childhood. The greatest question we have about the Rav, and I've been asked this question 1,000 times over, and I've so many people have written, some of it is good, some of it is pure shtuyat. The Rav made a sea change in his life. He was raised anical of Reb Chaim, anti-Zionist, 100%. Reb Chaim, his attitude toward Zionism, to modernity, I'll talk about it when I talk about the Tells Yeshiva. I'll show you a source that you'll dance. The Rav goes to Koslovich, going back to my lecture last week, goes to Warsaw, goes to Berlin. Rav comes to America, coming back to my lecture I think of yesterday. Worships the ground that Reb Lazer Suva walks on. Becomes the biggest agudist in the world. And these are facts. I'll show you in a second. Black and white. I don't have to use my imagination here. This is not research where you have to recreate. This is black and white. And we don't have a greater religious Zionist in the second half of the 20th century than Moriah Rebbe of Soloveitchik. His talk that night in 1956 still continues to change lives. You can't estimate how many tens of thousands of people became religious Zionists. The number may be in hundreds of thousands.
Kol Dodi Dofek.
And yes, Arya.
What did you think of Lichtenstein saying it was at a certain time and a certain place in his life?
I'll quote Rabarin. But I want to say what I want to say. I'm on top of the ball on this. I recorded in this classroom 9 hours. There's 6 tapes that the OU put out. It was their bestseller ever, the Rebbe Religious Zionist. My habit. And Rabarin later, certain things he said, exactly what I said. Exactly. Now, what do we mean the Rebbe became an Agudist? You see, they're very simple. Rebbe Moshe already was not as anti as his father. Rebbe Moshe couldn't be as anti as his father because of the Rebbetzin. Rebbetzin Pesha came from a family that was much more open to religious Zionism. And you probably know that that Feinstein family rebellion was related to the Katzenellenbogens, to some of the biggest Zionist families that we have from the original Zionist picture of the late 1800s, early 1900s. They were family, mamish family. So the Rav already was raised in an atmosphere that was more open. In Germany, he discovered an Agudat Yisrael, as I've said many times, when they sat down to eat, there were 3 forks on the table, 2 knives on the table, 2 spoons on the table, dignified, modern, up-to-date, and Agudistim, 100%. More than Germany, and later in life, the Rav critiques what he saw in Germany, that they were such agudistim and so separate from everyone else, that he said he was talking with this big Rav in Berlin. He didn't give the name, but I can imagine who it was. And the Rav said, I have more in common with the dignified Jews living in Berlin than the Hamon Ha'am in Poland. Neila with Rav Chaim Moshe, we have something in common, we observe Torah. But they were so totally caught up in Germany and dignity and Western civilization. And that Agudat Yisrael, and that was Jacob Rosenhain. Again, I trust you know what I'm talking about, that this Berlin, Frankfurt created Agudat Yisrael over the whole world, very happy to be at home in every country and be a good Jew and believe the Mashiach until the time of Messiah. There can be no Jewish sovereignty in the Holy Land. Okay. Then the Rebbe arrives in America. And he becomes very close to Reb Lazer Silva. As I told you more than once, Reb Lazer Silva becomes the image of what the Rebbe is striving for. Reb Lazer Silva himself, will come back to him in the Monday class in due course. Reb Lazer himself was a very fascinating individual. He became a gadol in America, had come to America basically a kid, freshly married, and running away from Europe. I told you why. He married on his own, fell in love with a girl he met in the Strassun library in Vilna. Everyone loves him. His tat is given a shtat rav, and he makes his own shidduch. And he said, the heck with Europe, I have family in America. This was their place, the challenge, America. Okay. By the mid-1930s, Reb Lazer was a Shem Dabo, was an established figure, the Rebbe of Cincinnati, the president of the Agudas HaRabbanim, and the Agudat Yisrael is holding the last Knesiyah Gedolah before World War II, 1937, Marian Bar, Czechoslovakia. Reb Lazer decides to go. He doesn't lack for support, wants to go back to Europe, see his Rebbeim, see what's going on. And he comes to Europe and he goes right away to see his Rebbe. He had learned in the kibbutz of Reb Chaim Moshe in Vilna, what we would call a kollel today. And he goes to see Reb Chaim Moshe, and Reb Chaim Moshe says to him, Lezele, my Talmud, ich tracht, as min daf gringin agudis Yisrael in America. I believe we have to establish Agudat Yisrael in America. Now, Agudat Yisrael will immediately say, Rakevet doesn't know what he's talking about. There was Agudat Yisrael in America since 1923, more or less. They're right. Formerly, there was an Agudat Yisrael with a little shul in Williamsburg, but they had no influence, no power. Reb Chaim Moses says to Reb Leisa Suva, it's time to establish an Agudat Yisrael. And Reb Chaim Moses knew exactly what he was talking about, because you now had the populace to appeal to, the refugees running away from Hitler. How many of you sitting in this room, your own families came to America in the mid-30s, the late-30s, you had people who were above the average observance in America. The post-World War II phenomenon, it has its roots here. So Reb Leizer goes back to America, and he organizes Agudat Yisrael. 1 year later, 1938, he holds an organizational convention in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati, the home of Reform Judaism, the heart of Reform, Hebrew Union College, the Treif Dinner, 1883, the Reform Jews are choking. The streets of Cincinnati are being defiled. People are walking in the streets with strimels, with bekishes. And who do you think is the first chairman of the Vad HaPoel of Agudat Yisrael in the United States? Mori Rebbe, Reb Yosef Dov, Halevi, Soloveitchik. Reb Leizer becomes the head of Agudah in America, and the Rav follows him just a step or two behind. Rabbi Hertz, you want to see that I'm absolutely, totally, completely right? No guesswork here. 1940, August, Reb Chaim Moshe dies. The convention that year is dedicated to the memory of Rabbi Chaim Moshe Grzynski of Vilna, Shichmo Lamalo Mikol Ha'am. You have no idea, we've spoken in different contexts to Rabbi Chaim Moshe. Was a lamdan, a posek, a literature gaon, and the person who was the most respected, most trusted to run Lithuanian Jewry. Rabbi Chaim Moshe dies, and the Machabed, the Rav, to eulogize Reb Chaim Moshe. If I can quote Agudistim to you of today, quote, there was never a more Aguda eulogy given in America than the eulogy the Rav gave for Reb Chaim Moshe. And what characterizes Agudat Yisrael? Two concepts. Das Teira, this is all in 1919, what does Das Teira mean? That the Gedolim will decide everything. It's not just you come to a Gadol with a halachic question, but even a daily social, economic, political question, the Gedolim will decide. The other concept that characterized Aguda, there can be no sovereignty in Judy in Palestine, in Eretz Yisrael, before Mashiach comes. And anyone who believes that there can be sovereignty before Mashiach is an absolute apikoros. And a Mizrachis cannot be a member of Agudat Yisrael. This was the two decisions made in 1919. The Rav got up and he eulogized Reb Chaim Moshe Yosef, the Tzitz and the Choshen Mishpat. What does the Tzitz represent? Kadosh Hashem. She'ilat Halacha. What does the Choshen Mishpat represent? Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, the 12 Shvatim, the beautiful stones. Any question dealing with Am Yisrael, not just Halacha, political, economic, everything I mentioned a moment ago, the Gedolei Yisrael decide, not the Hamon Ha'am. And that's the way the Rav eulogized Reb Chaim Moshe, that with his death, we lost the great Rav of Vilna, who represented the Kedusha B'Tara, the Tzitz, and the Choshen Mishpat. That chesed is pure unadulterated Agudat Yisrael ideology.
Did the Rebbe ever meet Rav Chaim Moser?
Of course. The Rav in Vilna, the Rav got married in Vilna. His wife was from Vilna. Rav Chaim Moser, of course. They knew Rav. Rav Chaim Moser was Talmud Chavev, Rav Chaim Briska. The Rav knew him intimately. There's more to the story, but not everything has to be said in front of a microphone. Wow. What a hesped. Rav Chaim Moser. The Rav Aguda, Reb Lazer Silva. This is a picture, a portrait, etched in stone. Yes, Yitzchak.
In the previous lectures that he gave, the reason that he told us that the Rav was not accepted in 1935 for the job of Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv,
right,
and the Rabbi from Antwerp did get it,
and the Rav was an
Akkadish.
That is absolutely correct. That's one of the reasons they give. There's more to it, because Rav Avigdor Meir was in the prime of life. He was very well known. The Rav was yet a youngster and viewed as an extremist and an Akkadish, and there was a lot of opposition. But we have to be, you and I have to be very thankful that he lost out in 35. All right, this is absolutely true. And then you pick up 1946. The Rav is the honorary president, if not 46, but shortly thereafter, the honorary president of the Mizrahi in the United States. And here you have to ask a question. What happened? And here I have to say, I got the most beautiful gift I ever got from the Rav. A person can change his mind. You have to always evaluate. And this was the beautiful drasha that the Rav gave years later, Yosef Yechav. I trust all of you are familiar with the drasha, just to restate the heart of it. What the Rav said was the machlokes between Yosef and his brothers was a machlokes l'shem shemayim. It wasn't the machlokes in halacha, it was a machlokes in political, economic reality. We're going down to Egypt. We're going down to a country that then represented the finest Western civilization that we have. We have to be prepared. The brothers said, no, we're used to living in Eretz Goshen, where we lived before in Eretz Yisrael. We don't have to change. Yosef said, no, we have to get ready. It's a different culture altogether. Yisimcha lokim ki Ephraim ucha Menashe. They have to be able to raise Jewish children with alien culture and alien challenge. And the Rav said this was a machlokes. It's not a halachic issue. Halachic issue, Rabbanim go to vote and decide. And the halach is like the Rabbanim. You all know this sugya in Bav Metzia, Tanur di Achnayi. You all know the sugya in Rosh Hashanah. Ein li Rosh Chodesh, ein li Shana Chadasha. Only what the rabbis decide. Even if from the point of view of eternal truth, they made a mistake. So, in this type of issue, you have to reevaluate. You have to see what is correct, what wins out, what succeeds. And years went by, and if not for Yosef at Tzaddik, we would have never survived Shibud Mitzrayim. The viewpoint of Yosef at Tzaddik turns out to be absolutely correct. And the Rav in this drasha is alluding to himself. He started to see that the Aguda point of view is not successful, not potent, just the opposite. It is very tragic. What brought this about? And here I can tell you. My own research. Look into my work on Reb Lazer Silva. My father and mother, late 30s, attended a rally at Madison Square Garden against Hitler. The rally was so big that the garden was filled and the overflow was out in the streets. Agudat Yisrael, absolutely not to rally, absolutely not to participate. The old point of view, shtadlanut, was very successful in the 19th century, the 18th century, the 17th century. In retrospect, the Rav saw vis-a-vis Hitler, it was the greatest mistake that we made not to shake the entire universe against Hitler. To go with old shitot, that we can bribe the man behind the scenes, didn't work. Time showed it didn't work, lo aleinu. More than that. In my humble opinion, the most traumatic experience in the Rav's public life came in 1943. The Rav talks about it. I quote him word by word. I saw in the memoir of the Boston Rebbetzin, the Hurwitz family. She writes about her own husband and what it did to him. And it's very simple. In 1943, everyone knew that Hitler was out to kill every Jew, man, woman, and child, and already succeeded in killing millions. The secret was out. The State Department couldn't hide it. Stephen Weiss, the Reform rabbi who went along with the State Department, couldn't keep it a secret any longer. So the Rabbanim decided Erev Yom Kippur, they would march on Washington, demand to speak to FDR, the President of the United States, and plead for action to be taken to save the remaining few million Jews in Europe. The rabbis came. A lot of research has been done recently. There's footage, movies on YouTube you can see. People have sent me pictures, asked me to identify who I can identify, and I've been able to identify the front row. I can identify most of the rabbis. The Rav doesn't appear. The Rav was a youngster. He was way in back. But there's Reb Lazer Silva, there's Reb Dov Aya Cohen Leventhal, there's Reb Yisrael Rosenberg, the well-known rabbis. And believe it or not, Roosevelt wouldn't even see the rabbis. They wanted to send in a delegation of the top famous heads of the Agudas HaRabbanim. Roosevelt, they claimed, was out of town, was busy, sent Henry Wallace, Vice President, and the Rav said, I quote him, and you know how much power a Vice President has, with all due respect to Vice President Pence. When Lyndon Johnson becomes President, then he has power. But until then, he's only a Vice President, no more than a yes man. The Rav was overwhelmed. Went back to Boston, he cried, the big trip, traveled. He says, "Given famated, we were worn out. Another day is the fast, is Yom Kippur. And you know what Yom Kippur means to a Jew, a Rav, is to speak, to prepare, to learn." And Roosevelt slammed the door in the Rav's face and the face of more than 200 other Rabbanim who were there. What this taught the Rav was that if we don't become activists, we're not going to succeed. And activism was exactly the opposite of what Agudat Yisrael stood for at that time. And the Rav had the guts, the courage, to break with his own past, to break with his friends, his upbringing, the images of the Rabbanim he knew, including Rav Chaim Isaac, and to declare klapei chutz bifneyam v'eida, I am a Mizrachiite. Rabbi Lichtenstein says this in one of this long after I said it, but he says it in one of his talks that were written up in the Alon Shvut bulletins that they send to their graduates or students who studied there, that what convinced the Rav that Mizrachi was right was activism. We can no longer depend upon shtat lanot. And I want to pause here. I will come back. I want to pause and just show you how the Rav influenced me. Hakarat HaTov, there's one issue where I've really changed my mind over the decades. People say to me, Rebbe, you haven't changed. You're exactly the way you were when you were 21. It's not entirely correct. I'll tell you something very interesting. The late 70s, you can check the date in my work on the Rav, I think it was 78. So the Rav spoke at a Sheva Brachas in Kew Gardens Hills, the Holza home. A number of times the Rav spoke at Sheva Brachas in the Holza home. But this time, he was 77, 78, the Rav really let down his hair. And the Rav got very upset with what's happened, was starting to happen in the United States. Everyone dressing the same, looking the same. Everyone wearing a black hat. I never saw the Rav in a black hat. Saw him in a blue hat and basically a gray hat and a brown hat. Only at the end of his life, when he depended upon his students, the shamashim, to buy him a hat, they bought him a black hat. And the Rav couldn't handle it. He said, this goes against my own thinking, my own tradition. He says, this does not allow for individual growth, for uniqueness. We can't produce another Reb Chaim if all our message of Yiddishkeit is, I think like you, I look like you, I act like you, I eat what you eat, I do what you do. Everyone is the same. The sameness troubled the Rav immensely. And he couldn't handle it. And I can tell you, Eved Nemana, when I visited the Rav in Boston, he pulled me aside. I had told you this over the decades, and he's surrounded by Talmidim from New York, among them my own Talmidim. And he says, don't look at the Hashkafis, they're crazy, he says. But they can learn him. So I thought he was talking just to me. A year later, Aaron Bat went, and he tells Aaron Bat exactly the same thing. And you see, the Rav struggled. This shift to the right, the dress, the same. So I have to tell you, for many years I complained about it. The Talmud of the Rav, I understand what the Rav is saying. But nowadays, I've made my peace with it. Why? Yosef Yechav, the world is so different than my world. The world in which I grew up, if you made a statement, you're a frum Jew, you became a frum Jew, you became a London. Nothing really disturbed us. All right, there were challenges outside. There's Torah and science. I remember all the lectures on Darwin. And I remember the Rebbe saying, these problems never bothered me. You're Adam 1, Adam 2. I don't have to go into more detail. But it's a different world today. On one hand, Yiddishkeit is too big. Thank God we have millions and millions of Shomrei Torah mitzvot. Yeshivot are filled to capacity. Who would ever dream in Lakewood that they 6,000 students, Mears 8,000 students, YU has a few thousand students running around at the various campuses. So Torah is very big. When you become big, you become diluted. Someone says he's a Ben Torah, it's not the same commitment, the same bren that existed in our hearts in the 40s into the 50s. But with all these challenges and endless money, what a kid can do already today, I've made my peace with everyone looking the same. And all of you know I've been quoted many times, if for you to remain frum, it requires a black hat. Wear two black hats. You follow? The yuntis, the shura is they should remain frum. They shouldn't be swept away. And here we come to Chassidus. Chassidus conquered the world. What is so potent about Chassidus? I told you more than once, not every chassid is a gon, and not every chassid is a tzaddik. I'll never forget when it was at a Fabrengen, I was a high school kid, it was at a Fabrengen at Lubavitch, and I tried to push to the front. I wanted to see the Rebbe. Oh, you kid, you push, you're stupid. So a guy turns around, you know, wearing 6'3", wearing the garb with the beard down to the floor, with a gartelon, and he turns around, and did he maledict us with curse words that only a sailor would use. All right? But he's a chassid. Baruch Hashem. We were at my Talmud, Normie Gold. Normie takes me to Chabad over the years quite a few times. So Normie takes me to Chabad. We want to catch Mincha. 7:70, there's davening all day, all morning shachris, all afternoon mincha, all night mariv. There's always a minyan going in the middle of 7:70. All right, 7:70, a makom kodesh, that's where the Rebbe, you know, you walk in, I see a fabregen, I see in my eyes the Rebbe sitting and what's going on, but all right, it's the new world today. So this guy is davening mincha. My word of honor, he might have become a Baal Tshuva a year and a half earlier. We never had a mincha like it. Ah, she must have had yotzeit. He could barely say yivra. Ah, yoshe. And the chazaras hashatz, we were halishing one mistake after another. When he finished the Oleinu, Yechi, Moreinu, V'Rabbeinu, Adoneinu, Moreinu, Rabbeinu, Madach, Mashiach, one of that, perfect Hebrew. Jumped up. This guy's also a chassid. So you see, what is the greatness of chassidus? Believe me, there are chassidim there that know kol haTorah kula backwards and forwards. I don't want to minimize anything. I can give you names in Chabad. Lamdonim of Haka, Rabbi Yol Kohn, Rabbi Levine, the library. Oh, you're dealing with Dole Yisrael. But you see, Lubavitch, chassidus, we're part of the family. We're part of the clique. We're part of the crowd. We all look alike. We all dress alike. We all daven the same nusach. Very hard to sin. All right, he cursed me out like a sailor. He doesn't know better. He just became frum. Maybe he was a sailor. This guy barely could say. But they're part of the crowd. You see, when you wear a black hat and you dress and everyone can tell, all right, I have a halachic problem if all you wear is black pants and a white shirt all week. So how is Shabbos any different? Where's your big day Shabbos? This is a halachic question. So one fella told me, well, Rebbe, I don't carry a pen on Shabbos. He takes the pen out of his pocket. Baruch Hashem. But you see, there is something to Hasidus. And it could be in today's day and age, you have to have black hats and a bekisha and a gartel, and we have to show we look alike, we think alike, we act alike. There's something to it. And I've changed my mind. Rakefet, for me, I can't be like that. I'm living with the Rav. The Rav is sitting right here. What are you talking about? I'm living with reality of my reality. But I'm smart enough to understand what works and what doesn't work. So we won't produce a Reb Chaim, so everyone will be a Nachseya, and we'll have Shailas, a kid will ask a question in class. But an Art Scroll Rebbe, in the commentary, Art Scroll says, I heard this with my own ears on a tape, a kid is asking a question, why would have... Kid asked me a question from Archro. He's out on a... I give him to Rabbi Dulitz. Label, take care of this kid. But this is the reality. And I'm not ashamed to say I changed my mind. Baruch Hashem. The Rav taught me this. If this great Agudis could come a Mizrachis, then I can not be ashamed if I shift gears. And I have to tell you, this activism that changed the Rav and Aryeh. This was the point I made in New York, that the Rav and Reb Aaron Lichtenstein says this too. I said it first. I developed it. But Reb Aaron, a few years later, I saw, and he spoke again on his own, reached the same conclusion. This activism, if you look at Agudat Yisrael today, so I want to ask you, is Agudat Yisrael back where it was in 1919? Or is it a different Agudat Yisrael today, 100%? As far as I know, Agudat Yisrael is sitting right here in the state of Israel. And Baruch Hashem, they're part of the Knesset. They were even part of the government. We have a problem with the present Gerer Rebbe. That's a different story. His way of thinking is not our way of thinking. He will not talk to anyone who's not a Shomer Shabbos. You understand?
So how can he have influence?
Say that he doesn't want to have influence. He's happy just to have influence on his Gerer world. To our way of thinking, I want every last Jew to be a Shomer Shabbos. I want to talk, and I want to talk in dignity, and I want to talk about the blood in your veins, everything I spoke about yesterday. And I want to talk, Am Yisrael, Klal Yisrael, we came, we returned, what characterizes being a Jew? There's plenty to talk about. But all right, the Gerer Rebbe has his own Shita, and you see he pulled Leitzman out of the government. So what happens now, you have, it's hypocrisy, that you're the Sgan Tsar with all the privileges of the Tsar without the responsibility of the Tsar. This is teaching a kid to be a faker. You speak about fake news. This is Gedolei Yisrael teaching hundreds of thousands of youngsters to be fakers, to be cheaters. You understand? This is unbelievable. But where are we? You talk about activism. Look at Agudat Yisrael in the United States. Agudat Yisrael, and they solved all problems. They had terrible problems. You don't even realize. On a good convention, thousands come. No, the Hasidim sit separately, at least the Gerach Hasidim. But then, once the Gerach Hasidim sit separately, other Hasidim are ashamed to admit they sit with their wives Friday night. It's an open Mishnah in Ketuvah. You have to eat with your wife on Shabbos? No, they don't know that Mishnah. They neglect that Mishnah. But they sell out. They're unbelievable. When you sign up for a good convention, seating preferred, family or separate? So family, the Litvakim, I hope, who knows, the influence of the Chassidim. But we can change our minds. Maybe if the Rav had lived long enough, you don't want to quibble with success. And I come back to what I said yesterday. Look at the Rav's own family. Rabbi Moshe Meiselman, Rabbi Meir Tversky, Lo Aleinu, the late murdered Kadosh Rabbi Moshe Tversky, Hashem Yikom Damo, Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein. See, from the Rav's own family, take a look. They're not dressing, thinking, acting on that level like the Rav. The learning, the godlet, the tzidkut, absolutely. But the gestalt beyond, they're on their own. Would the Rav be happy with them? In my humble opinion, absolutely, yes. And I'll bring you a proof to it before I end. Give me another second. Baruch atah melech haolam shehakol nehiya bidvaro. Rabbi Hertz, you can say Eitut Nemana when you get back. It's a gift from a Talmud, a virtual Talmud.
I haven't... He sees...
The New York Yankee natural spring water bottle. And I had to pour the water out getting onto the plane. The Americans are crazy. What can I say? At least when I flew to Moscow, I didn't have to pour the water out. I got so much from Rebbe. The Hakara Tatov, there's no end to what we can say thank you. I have a drop more to do next week against Rakashem. But how much influence one person had. We were a very intelligent group of youngsters. We were seeking, we were searching. And our minds met. When I eulogized David Applebaum, Dr. David Hashem Yikom Damo, I made the point that we shared something in common. He reached Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, literally in Reb Aaron's prime. I reached the Rav in his prime. We both linked with the Rebbe Muvhak at the height, the apex of their life, their thinking, all that goes with it, their strength, etc. And continuing what we spoke about yesterday, I spoke about the women's issue. Yes, Rebbe made me very sensitive to the issue. I don't say we have a black and white total answer, but I think we're going on the right path. And I like my RA, my essay, not because I came up with it, but because I think it's halachically acceptable, more than acceptable. I think it's a good response to the contemporary conflict of civilizations, of Torah and Western, Ger B'Toshav Anachi Machem. When it comes to Zionism, there's no question that the Rav had an unbelievable impact on an entire, not just a generation, it's eternity. We'll come to that next week. And there's so much we gained, we were inspired, we were encouraged. Every other Rebbe in Yeshiva laughed at B'nai Akiva, not the Rav. And underlined the not with a capital N. He shifted gears. And that too is an important message. The ability to judge, to see what works, what doesn't work. The Vaha Shemzu Halacha, the Beitin decided, the Ribbono Shel Olam tries to mix in, and what did they say to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Lo Bashamayim Hi. Not your ASIC. And much has been written on this topic. I've given shirim on it and quoted. Look into the introduction to the Ksaisa Chayshim. Yes, we can change our minds when something works better for Yiddishkeit on a hashkafic level. Yosef Yechov, I consider that the most important drusha from the point of view of insight that the Rav ever gave. Wow. And I think the activism, I think I summarized it correctly. One final question. All that we're speaking about, and all that we touched upon, and now at the end of the shiur with the examples of the Rav's own family, who are very distant from the Rav hashkafically. Tell me, how would the Rav react to all this? And here I leave you with an open question. I once raised the issue, speaking in Los Angeles. Gave a number of lectures there. And I raised the issue how the Rav differs from Rav Shimshon Ful Hirsch. Rav Shimshon Ful Hirsch, if you're familiar, I just recommended to my nephew here last night that he must study once again the 19 letters. It'll answer all the questions he was asking me. If you're familiar with the 19 letters of Rav Hirsch, you see that Rav Hirsch had a view of this Torah and culture, Torah of the Derech Eretz, call it what you wish. This was eternity. This was the Jewish approach. Tell me, what if we could have all the Gentiles work for us, discover cures for cancer, for heart illness, conquer the world in every possible way, and then be satisfied if we just sat and learned Gemara, sat and learned Shas, Paiskim, Rishonim, Achronim, Shelet Uchuvat. Tell me, is this good for us? Is this the Jewish way? According to Rav Hirsch, absolutely not. We have to leave the ghetto. Rav Hirsch writes, who put us in the ghetto? We never chose the ghetto. Yafa Tamatorim Derech Eretz. Conquer the world. Would the Rav agree to that? I'm not certain. And here I have to tell you, at times the Rav contradicts himself in what I said in relation to his philosophic writings. You can't build a philosophical system, because I believe the Rav utilized the philosophy that he was a master of, the contemporary lingo, the Cantonian, Hegelian dialectics. He used it for the sake of Torah. But what did he really believe? If you study the Ish Halakha, you'll come to the conclusion the Rav is more in the camp of Rav Shimshon HaFol Hirsch. If you study the Rav's talks in the 50s, the 60s, you can reach a different conclusion. And here I have in my work, I quote the Rav word by word, the Rav repeats this concept because the times demand it. Because the times demand it. My son Chaim comes home and the mothers complain to me, and I see how hard Chaim works, and he has a dual curriculum, and he has to learn and Shas and Paiskim, and he has to do his high school work. What can we do? The times demand it. And you see the Rav's description of why he loves Yeshiva College. In the morning my students are in a real yeshiva, and in the afternoon they go upstairs and they're in a real college. But tell me, what if the times didn't demand it? And in my humble opinion, the basic thrust in the Rav was the Litvish Talmud Chacham. Could be that he'd be very happy not to live like Rav Shimshon HaFol Hirsch. It's an interesting question. I can't give a black and white answer. I can only sharpen your senses to feel the question. But the question hangs fire. But that helps explain, if the system works, fine. They look alike, think alike, dress alike. Would the Rav be happy 50, 60 years later? He wasn't happy in the 70s, but in the 20s, which we're heading into, the challenges to Torah are overwhelming. So-called Orthodox rabbis bless two gays getting married. You have to rip Kriya just to read it. Okay, not every question has an answer. Play with it. Read particularly volume 2 of the Rav by Aaron Rakefet, and read the Rav word by word. See what he has to say. My dear students, so today we accomplished quite a bit. The debt we owe to Rebbe, the heart of the lecture dealt with religious Zionism. I'll come back to it again next week. And I have a big surprise, Be'ezrat Hashem. What I gained perhaps more than anything else from the Rav, and no one here can guess it. Only Rabbi Reuben can appreciate it fully, because we were Talmidim of the Rav. I want to thank you all for coming. I wonder how I'll get home, but we'll trust the Eibishter will not let his servant down. I want to mention, Rabbi Reuben sent me a piece on Anatoly Rubin, Prisoner of Zion. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. And I think the same way. What do I want to say is, this was one of the first fighters for the rebirth of Russian Jewry. His name is forgotten today. I'm very much trying to put out two chapters that were edited out of Washington. They were worried the book would be too big. Okay? It was a 530 pages or something, maybe more. Why do I want to publish these chapters? For this exact reason. These are people who were very active in the 80s that risked their lives to wake up Soviet Jewry. Today their names are gone and forgotten. They deserve to be remembered. this is exactly the message from, you have the same name, from Anatoly Rubin. Wow. Beautiful article. He died a year ago. It's his first Yahrzeit. Died at 90. Here's the latest contact. This is the Steinhardt Foundation. So much money being wasted to try to create Yiddishkeit. And they do an article on Americans living in Israel that they still follow baseball. I can assure you that the person who did the article didn't do his research properly if he didn't reach a guy named Rakefet and the DiMaggio Hespet. But the picture I love, this is Dov Lipman, the former Chaver Knesset. Take a look at Zay Freitzichsich with an Orioles uniform and a book about baseball. I know the book. Tanayin Hara. This, if anyone is interested, is supposed to be a valuable book. It's very interesting. It's from an auction that was held recently in Yerushalayim. And I can't get over, if you save a piece of paper, it becomes worth a fortune. Here, the cover of the book are letters written by a Talmud, but it's signed by the Chafetz Chaim and has the Chafetz Chaim stempel. And this becomes worth a fortune. The whole book is interesting on what they're selling. What can I tell you? I've thrown out a lot of valuable papers over the year. This is Chabad, Kingston, Pennsylvania. Believe it or not, a whole Chabadicum are moving. It's cheaper than Crown Heights. And there's jobs available there, a new area. I have two copies of this, very interesting. This is the counter-reaction against those trying to diminish Shlomo Lekalbach. And it's the counter-reaction, who are the women who are complaining, description of the women, but I have to tell you, I'm not convinced that the counter-reaction is entirely correct. Brooklyn Holocaust Museum, dealing with religious Jews during the Holocaust, it's just opened. By the way, Yad Vashem has much more on display because religious Jews are speaking up. This is insane. I can't get over this. These are two Satmar Poskim, and they tell me one is a Lamdan with Pablo Sfarim, how to deal with off-the-derech children. And their psak is, kick them out. Plain and simple. Can't believe it. But all right, there's a counter-reaction there. This is Benny Lau, and Madu Hishtaftafti B'chatunat Homa'im HaRav Lau Mazbir. It's beyond words, beyond words. I can't get here. She's giving them a bracha. Sickening. And finally, this is a wonderful article by Rabbi Fisher Jacobs, who became a black belt in, what is that, judo, what do they call it?
Karate.
A black belt and a black gato. Only Chabad. Baruch Hashem, in 2 weeks. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness next Sunday, Monday, we should only have Besora Tova Jeshuot Nechamat Aleinu V'Kol Yisrael. We should have good rain, but only at night when we're asleep. And we should survive the visit of the VP of the United States of America. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Danya. Okay, Bruchim to you, Bruchim to you.